website at libertywish.org.
And you are listening to 94.1 KPFA and 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K248BR in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. The time is 2 p.m. Stay tuned next for the Visionary Activist Show.
All right, we're back. I think that means we're on. Okay, oh, quirky KPFA. Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So, next week, we will be hosting the defiantly joyful Deborah Felmuth upon her return from her home in Syria. She was there October, November, December, and she reminds us that Salam and shalom, peace. And she says, in Arabic and Hebrew, peace is not the absence of war, but the presence of one. And we go, right, right, right. You know, and we might imagine all the good-hearted banners out there, resist, resist, resist. And we go, that's all pretty good, but how about, you know, replacing them with protect, protect. So today is Candlemas. Today and tomorrow is exact midwinter in the Northern Hemisphere. And mythologically, it's when Persephone lights her candle and begins ascending up from the underworld, and we with her. So this, our show today, we will have two segments, and in the second segment, we will be hosting Carol Hoover, who's here with me in studio, and Dune Lankert in Alaska, executive director and founder and co-founder of the EOC Preservation Corps, and we will be honoring a really great environmental victory about the Bering Cold Seal that will be protected. They've been working on this for decades. But first, liberating satire and a great environmental victory. We welcome Mark Bryan, a visual satirical genius. His website is artofmarkbryan, BRYAN.com. He will be having a show in Berkeley with with other artists on April 28th. Excuse me, at the Berkeley Arts Center. And yes, I am grateful to my ally Jet for guiding me to Mark's fabulous satirical work. Oh, this sounds good. And that also came via Hal Robbins, who posted an image to the Ask Dr. Hal radio show archives this week. So welcome, Mark Bryan.
Oh, welcome. Thank you. Thanks for inviting me to the show. I'm very happy to be here.
No, absolutely. I mean, I know you are a visual genius, you know, but there's much to honor. You know, as we said backstage, I said satire. You know, the Celts thought that only satire, or primarily satire, could bring down the tyrannical king, and the satirist would have to present their artful critique to the unruly tyrant king, and the king would have to respond in artful kind, a moot point here, and whoever's critique was less true, the ground would open up and eat them. So I look forward to that possible painting. But you do have, I know it's challenging, and we have posted, and people go right away, run to your computer, to go to the artofmarkbryan.com just to pull these things up. But can you maybe describe the Kraken for us? Just for the fun of it?
Yeah, the Kraken is a mythological beast. It's from Norwegian lore, and it rises up from the deep, and it's an unhealthy thing and a twisted thing. And, you know, it also has been depicted as an octopus, and which has a long history in editorial cartoons. And I was inspired by an old it's actually a cartoon by Udo Kepler in 1904, and that was the Standard Oil Company depicted as an octopus. And so I I think a long time about my paintings, and I'm not like an editorial cartoonist that paints or draws something every day. I don't do a lot of work. They take me like a month and a half to finish and revise them a lot and sweat over them. And so I kind of wait till an idea germinates, and this octopus thing was, or the kraken was in there for a while,
and it's got the head of Donald Trump, right? The tentacles extending from the White House, pulling in the oligarchs and the Dementors and everything, and we go, yes, Octopus Enterprises, tentacles everywhere. Is a joke, but all jokes have become so literal right now. My God.
Right.
And then the very wonderful one. The kind of most famous one. What is it? The Trumpo meat. The Trump. What is it? Remind me. The Trumpo.
The Trumpomatic.
Yes.
I came up with the idea of Trump is such a narcissist that, you know, he's too lazy to even do the work of, you know, ginning up his crowds. He has this machine, which is kind of an automaton that looks like him. And there's all these buttons on the back, and he pushes the buttons, you know, literally to make the crowd go nuts. And the buttons are hate, fear, lying, bullying, and bragging. And, you know, I have him depicted on a stage with a big audience out in front of him, and they're sort of going crazy. And he's also behind this machine painted as a baby, and he's standing on a little platform, which is actually a jail full of Muslims and Mexicans, and they're reaching out. I didn't want to make them, you know, total victims, so I painted them trying to unplug his machine. So they're pulling on the electrical cord.
Right. No, that's so great.
Yeah. What I try to do is just put in as many symbols as I can in the painting that, you know, tells a story of how I see the situation.
And also, I know people who've worked on dark works of art. A friend of mine who was restoring a painting that had last hung in Hitler's dining room, and he put pentagrams all over it, so he just only worked on a little piece of it, and that's when we met. He's like, "Thank God you've come, I need help." But you are so crafted. Now there's a liberating, to us, to the audience, you know, wit when we see this crafted painting, right? This is really important as a painting, you know, but it's like, wah! But is it hard for you to be concentrating on the dark befoibelment some more, or is the art liberating you as you work?
It does both. I get sort of, when I'm trying to germinate the idea, I get very stressed out, actually. Had some high blood pressure episodes. And then once I sort of get it figured out, I'm fine. And there's something therapeutic about it. I found this quote I'd like to read about satire, a person who does satire. And this is by John Passos. It says, a satirist is a man who's flesh creeps so much at the ugly and the savage and incongruous aspects of society that he has to express them as brutally and nakedly as possible to get relief. So that sort of resonated with me.
Yeah.
So when something's going on that's really disturbing to me, I sort of have to work it out as a painting, and somehow it makes me feel better. It's a way of sort of hitting back at.
No, I think it's really important. You know, again, it's Venus art that relieves us of the tantrum yoga of uninitiated Mars. It's part of what I sent you too. You know, how much more liberating would it be for people to be carrying banners of your images through the streets rather than feeding the Dementors by smashing Starbucks windows with hammers or tantrum yoga and whatever? And we go, no, spicy art, more wonderful. But also, I don't know if you know the epitaph on Jonathan Swift. Gravestone, where it says, "Here lies Jonathan Swift, where the fierce winds of savage indignation can no longer lacerate his heart." We go,
Wow. Yeah, I didn't know that. That's great.
It's a good one. No, it's true. And again, when it's churning, the conniption fits, you know, and you're doing it, you know, artist as keeper of collective soul is part of the Candlemas Imbolc Persephone myth of right now today. It's the artist as the keeper of collective soul who goes down into the underworld, and illuminates it, right? I mean, you're doing it. You know, our word obscene is a Greek stage direction. It means off stage, obscene. And so you're illuminating the obscene. You're doing a tremendous work for all of us, lad. We're very grateful of going into the underworld and illuminating, going right and
thank you.
Thank you.
I think that, you know, all the arts, not just visual arts, part of their function is to illuminate, you know, and tell the story of our present time. And, you know, it's also stories of, you know, human nature in general. So, you know, artists need to keep doing this stuff all the time. And it's a way of connecting people and of educating people and telling the human story. And, you know, a lot of this stuff, nothing is new, but it needs to be brought out continually.
Yes. Oh, no, and it's part of this surge, or part of this surge of defiant creativity, which there's more, and you know, and let's honor your inspiring and supportive ancestors, Mad Magazine, Zap Comics,
yeah.
R. Crumb, Robert Williams, but Mad Magazine,
right.
Yes, I grew up with those because they were in the basement because my siblings had them, and I still remember things from Mad Magazine because it was such a good
attitude. I've been around forever, and yeah, we couldn't wait every month for the next issue, and you know, it started with that, and then, you know, I was maybe 20 years old during the Vietnam War and almost got drafted, and you know, politics became, you know, a serious reality for people of our age at that time. And so that affected me forever since then. You know, the importance of the decisions that governments make. You know, and I was trained in fine art, and I'm not really an editorial cartoonist, but a lot of my work is very different, but it usually has some kind of symbolism that's come make a comment about society and human nature and human predicament and things like that.
And it is fine art. It's an extraordinary, you know, riptide of fine art meeting political cartoons. But in this deep, as you say, it takes you a month and a half, and you have to. Yes, we want your blood pressure down. We're the entire dedicated listening audience is wishing you ginger root and turmeric root beside you as you paint, lad, because you're important to the whole team. But yeah, and just from Mad Magazine, these things that stay with us as companions. It was just a cartoon with, you know, the little signs that you see along the highway. It goes, "Can't afford to wait much longer. Fat Nikita getting stronger, Sherman tanks." And I just, you know, I saw that when I was little, and it stayed with me forever, just as such a good attitude. And, and R. Crumb and Robert Williams and, the Leather Nun and Dealer McDope. And, these are all fine artists.
Right.
And thank you for carrying on their tradition. People can find you at artofmarkbryan.com. I encourage everybody, you know, it's for the full gallery of, like, oh, these are great. You won't be able to wait to share them. I've posted them several times going, I can't help but post this again on Facebook and website and whatnot. That's really great. And again, you will be part of a group show on April 28th at the Berkeley Arts Center, and that will be listed on your website as well, artofmarkbryan.com. Right. Well, is there any woofy well wishing you want to spiral? Well, and the phone call. Do you have a plan for? Do you have anything brewing now that you don't mind sharing, or if you might want to just incubate privately?
Well, I think I need a break from this guy.
Yeah. Good. Good.
But, you know, you have to take care of yourself somewhat, but
yeah.
I'm starting to get the some things brewing with the Bannon guy.
Woo-hoo.
You know, and it's not quite clear yet, but I'm sure, you know, this guy is he's a walking satire. It's, you know, low-hanging fruit. He's he's the best president we've ever had. Well, ever will be for the entire history of man and the universe and
for
the multiverses.
Yes, no, I love the multiverses. That's right. No, the multiverses are very important. Well, the best in the sense of we need what you do, the medicine of your visual satire. So much. Yes, take a break. But yes, there's the Bannon character. And then just, you know, I stood next to Andrew Breitbart. I went to the Conservative Political Action Conference some years back. Because I'll go to everything. We all have our different, you know, take it for the team, right? But I do carry ginger root tea and protective amulets and whatnot. But I was standing right next to, like, feet away from this person who I didn't know who it was, who was clearly having a kind of psychotic break. It looked alcohol and amphetamine fueled, and he was just yelling at the protesters, "You're all rapists, you're all rapists." And even his conservative dingbat colleagues had to come and lead him away, and then he went and died 2 weeks later. But it's like, whoa. And I was like, who's that? They go, that's Andrew Breitbart. Don't you know his toxic website? Yeah. Even the conservatives referred to it as toxic. And now they're running the world. Yes, Bannon has the NSC. Oh, we want to stop all these things. But he, within his power, is assassination. He can choose who he wants to assassinate. Anyway, good luck with that.
Yeah, frightening stuff. And I hope they self-destruct soon.
Well, by the power of your art, by the power of the Celtic satirist and Mad Magazine and R. Crumb behind you and all who love you, and we see, you know, protective wafting influences and ginger root and turmeric root all around you and replenishing so that you have a mad, calm gleam. Yes, whatever you want. Anyway, it's a complete delight, and we're so grateful for your work, and thank you very much, Mark Bryan.
Thanks for the encouragement and for having me on your show.
Absolutely. It is really great. All right, I will reluctantly release you, and we will be in contact later as more wonderful things happen.
All right.
Right. Yes. All right, team. So now we segue, you know, gracefully to something else that is rousing to us, you know, on this day of Candlemas, of emerging from the underworld with Persephone lighting her candle and we with her. And that is, yes, the EAC Preservation Council. I don't know if I said the wrong thing, but spirits are informing me. So our wonderful guest, Carol Hoover, who's here with me in the Washington studios. Welcome, Carol.
Hello, Caroline.
And also Dune Lankert, who's joining us from Alaska. These are the executive directors, co-founder and founder of the EAC Preservation Council. That's EAACPreservationCouncil.org, EYAK, PreservationCouncil.org, where wild salmon rule, to honor their dedication, resulting in some pretty heartening victories at this time of dire beauty. So welcome, Dune.
Thank you, Carolyn. I'm always thrilled to hear your voice and be on your show.
That's wonderful. Well, so this is pretty crucial because I've known you some time and you've been working on innumerable things for the collective, but you've been working on this for decades, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, this project is has been a tough one. We I think started in like 1997, 1998, when we heard about this potential development of these controversial coal fields on the Eastern Copper River Delta. And the battle to save these coal fields actually started 105 years ago when J.P. Morgan and the Guggenheims wanted to mine the Bering coal field and power their locomotives to go up to Kennecott, up near McCarthy, to take the copper ore out and sell it on the open market. And so this battle jump-started the conservation movement in Alaska, and the battle went all the way to the highest levels of the Supreme Court, where after about a decade, it was argued where the Guggenheims and J.P. Morgan was considered a monopoly. They called them the Alaska Syndicate. And they said it was a monopoly allowing them to steal one resource, the coal, to go up to the interior to steal another resource. And so the coal field was protected for about 100 years until a regional corporation, Chugach Alaska Corporation, was able to receive it as part of their Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. And that's when the battle was renewed to figure out how to save this place before it got destroyed permanently.
And let me quote you to you, because Carol wonderfully sent me a lot of the press, and I was like, they did it, because I've seen you, because you were, you know, again, to negotiating with the Korean industrialist who owned it, who wanted to do good, you know, but he had a board of directors, and you were raising money and dealing with difficult environmentalists and good environmentalists and dementors of all kinds, and you did it all, but you say an entire watershed is valued as priceless and now is forever protected from unwarranted development, keeping fossil fuels in the ground, eliminating carbon emissions in a region where we can still drink from our rivers, have clean air to breathe, and where we still have some of the tallest coastal glacier-capped mountains in the world. So you did it, or many did it, or...
Boy, got a little more to go, though, because
okay.
There's still 11,000 acres that are owned by... a conservationist, actually, now. Dune and his diplomacy has changed a South Korean energy buyer into a person who wants to sell his coal title in the name of conservation. But now, with this victory, all of the coal around it has been retired. But we still want to retire 11,000 more acres of very valuable coal in the region.
So how can people support you and your good work?
Dune and I think at this juncture it would probably be best to reach us directly. And you can look on the website truly, but you can also email us at info at redzone.org, redzone.org, and we'll get your emails. And we will, we're going to need public support. We're going to need private support to take this one step farther, but not to take away from the victory that just happened. We're talking about 62,000 acres of retired coal fields, and it's a wonderful thing to happen right now to keep coal in the ground.
And I know, Dune, that you'd been long talking to the Korean, you know, industrialist who owned it and who you were kind of pitching to him, as you say you want to go beyond fossil fuels. This will be a great PR story for you. Is that part? Was that part of your long conversation?
Yes. One of the, you know, thoughts that we had with Dr. Joe Shin, the owner of the coal patents, is that two of his partners are Hyundai and Samsung. And so, you know, they, I think over the years, you know, really wanted to try and figure out how to, you know, access this coal and burn it in South Korea. And we had convinced him that the carbon footprint would be so huge to build a $100 million access road to get this coal field 55 miles east of the Copper River. And then in order to mine this coal, since the vertical strips coal, you would literally have to do mountaintop removal in order to take the coal. And so it'd be at like a 20-to-1 ratio, 20 ton gravel to 1 ton coal. So it'd be fairly expensive. And then they ship that all the way to South Korea to burn, over there. And, you know, the estimates, it's a wild range from as low as 60 million ton of harvestable coal to upwards of 3 billion ton of coal in this region. And the reason they can't tell how much is because of the vertical strips. And so we, over the years, have had numerous conversations with him. He was able to come to Cordova and meet our family and hang out with the EAC Preservation Council and our Native Conservancy, and really truly understand the value of this coal field from a Native perspective. And so, you know, I think that at this point, we're probably in round 5, year 20 of getting this deal done. When Obama was in office, we had a verbal promise, that they would put $10 to $11 million towards this conservation deal, with half in cash and half in some sort of a federal land swap. We haven't surrendered that idea completely yet. You know, we feel that, you know, there is a new administration coming in, but we do feel that there's still an opportunity, because we're working with an organization called Wildlife Forever that has a million hunters and sport fishermen that, love preserving habitat. And I know, a couple of Trump's sons are, avid hunters and sport fishermen. So, we're going to pursue that, as well as, try and get the Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Trustees Council to consider extending their restoration boundary, because we feel that once a linked injury report is done, that we can prove that a lot of the species that were impacted from the Exxon spill in 1989 actually fled to the Copper River Delta and are surviving quite well out there. So we feel that it's two sister watersheds that deserve preserving and protecting for the rest of time.
And I want to go back to an important part of your medicine that you and Carol both carry, which is when you said, but the Trump sons are avid hunters, and I did inhale going, but it's like, no, to what you've earned, the muscle tone that you've built is, dealing with industrialists, dealing with fossil fuel people, you step into where you can find the guiding story, and guide them out of the thing. And that's such an important medicine that you did with the Korean industrialist, going, here, come this way, you're worried about posterity and you want to be a hero, that'll be good, and oh, you Trump zombie cuckoo family, you love hunting, there you go. We might say, let all tyranny be an opportunity for guiding, and that we want to expand our negotiating and storytelling skills, as you and Carol have both done. That's really great.
It's been, like Carol can tell you more about this, but we've had to go into the belly of the beast numerous times and try and figure out, how we could make, some sense economically and environmentally out of most of the chaos and nonsense that's going on in the world, and figure out how not to trade environment for environment, but really, come up with creative financial ways that we can turn bad projects into good projects. And what a lot of people don't realize is that the Copper River Delta, like our buddy David Grimes says often, the Copper River Delta is already highly developed in its undeveloped state. So how can we make it possibly any better than it already is? And so the value of conservation is an economic factor to a area where millions of wild salmon come home every year. As long as you protect that habitat, you protect that renewable economy. And so we've always felt that, the challenges of having to go into the belly of the beast, as difficult as they are, we found that if we focus on the things that we have in common, which are the economy and drinking clean water and having access to clean air, that we can find something in common with everyone. And especially over wild salmon.
That's great. No, we want to come back to that. We're going to take a very short break. I hope you can hang with us. Can you hang with us, Dune?
Yes.
Excellent. All right. So our wonderful guests are Dune Lenker, joining us from Alaska, and Carol Hoover. They are executive directors, founder, and co-founder of the EAC Preservation Council. That's EACPreservationCouncil.org. And we have a great victory, but again, of saving so much, an entire watershed. They've been working on this since 1997, 1998. Takes a lot of dedication, team, and a lot of skill and a lot of willingness to go into the belly of the beast, as Dune Lankert just said. And we'll be right back after this very short break.
She shook the constellation that dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellation that dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Oh, get down.
Shiny, 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 come blow my shiny horn. Jenny, Jenny, come blow my Jenny home. Telegraph my indigo sky ship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. In our first segment, we featured the wonderful visual satirical genius Mark Bryan. The art of markbryan.com is really great. And this time now, where we are continuing with our wonderful guests, longtime allies of myself, the show, and the Earth, Carol Hoover and Dune Lankert, joining us in Alaska. Carol Hoover here in DC Studios, executive director and founder and co-founder of the EYAK Preservation Council. That's E-Y-A-K, preservationcouncil.org, where wild salmon rule. And Dune and Carol, I should just say also, my animals, you know, are my Stella Coyote sends her regards, and she had a bad diagnosis, but we've moved her to medical cannabis and homeopathy, and she's doing pretty good, but she's insisting, as is the cat who has been unwell but is recovering, they only want to eat wild Alaska salmon now, right?
Oh.
And they're doing very well. So the coyote, my coyote friend, is eating the salmon that is so much a part of your beautiful life. It's very vital, isn't it? They're like, argh, argh.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I sometimes tell the story, you know, of how the EYAKs have sustained themselves for the last 3,500 years on the coast of Alaska. And we harvest those fish right before they head up to the rivers to spawn and die. And so we capture them at their highest levels of energy. And so they literally are like torpedoes of energy. And so when we eat that salmon, it becomes a part of us, and we become a part of that salmon. And that is what sustains us to do this work and survive as long as we have on the Delta.
Yeah, and I remember the first time we met when we were going down the Copper River with our blessed ally, Dr. Grimes, and there you were, reverently, skillfully, just scooping a salmon out, going there, thank you, brother, sister, salmon, and then we ate it within minutes. And it was so powerfully sacred, and you were so skillful and reverent in your killing and cooking. Long years of ancestral reverence moving through your skillful, beautiful body. Yeah.
Thank you. You know, we at the EYAK Preservation Council, you know, we started the EYAK Wild Salmon Potlatch years ago to share this incredible salmon with other people. And you know, I've always felt that, you know, I am part salmon too, and that there's a t-shirt that says, I fish, therefore I am.
Yes.
And most of us kids, you know, seven siblings, we started fishing by the time we were 5, 6, 7 years old. And so we grew up, with the salmon, and I just loved, being out there on the water for 3, 4 months at a time, making a living. And, you know, and I remember one point asking my mother, you know, like, why do we do this? You know, why can't we stay in town and play baseball and, you know, go to the circuses and play basketball and stuff? And she said, but you're feeding the world. You know, the work that all of us do, we feed the world. And so I always felt, you know, proud of the fishery way of life that we had.
And now you've
and
even
still do.
And now you've even more protected it again. Just for our listeners to remind, and those joining us, you know, skidding into the middle here, you know, do you want to delineate just again the victory carol, and then I want to come back to idealism and pragmatism to and fro. But yeah, just
yeah, certainly. Thank you. 73,000 acres was slated for coal mining and clear cutting when this land was chosen by the Chugach Alaska Corporation, and after years and years of tenuous work and some luck and some change of attitudes, 63,000 acres of this coal is going to stay in the ground, and the trees are going to stay on top, and the Chugach shareholders are actually going to reap benefits because of these somewhat controversial but a step in the right direction carbon offset deal that has just happened. And it's actually in relationship to the California's Air Resources Quality Board that allowed Alaska into this program. And it is benefiting the shareholders. In other words, this is a win-win. We have a conservation victory. It's a conservation for the salmon and for the birds. And the other thing is that Chugach Alaska Corporation actually retains the title to the land. So the native people have still owned the land, but they have relinquished their development rights.
Ah.
And the covenant, the restrictive covenant of the coal, is actually being placed into the Native Conservancy Land Trust, which Dune founded in 2003.
Yay.
With the goal of the Bering River Coalfield. So I would like to say to activists and conservationists and people who are doing the good work that sometimes it takes a long time. So we are thrilled about this, I have to say.
No, it's...
Yeah, and I would like to add one thing to that. That was great, Carol, is that, you know, we did have to stop the 55-mile road planned across the Copper River Delta in 98 that would have crossed dozens of salmon streams and 29 miles of public land. And then in 2004, we had to stop the oil and gas drilling at Katella, which was the site of the first oil well in Alaska in 1907. But over a 30-year period, it only yielded about 155,000 barrels. So we didn't feel that there was any bonanza of oil out there that we would want to jeopardize the pristine nature of this place again. And then we, for the last 25 years, we've stopped this deep water port being built in the name of oil spill response at this place called Shepherd Point. And so that would have connected the development dots had that happened, but EAC Preservation Council held the line and stopped those projects. And actually, that's why we've wow. been able to set up the carbon trading offset because of our past work.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, after we, I started working with Dune actually around 94, 95, a long time ago, and worked with him to actually help stop the clear cutting in Prince William Sound after the Exxon Valdez oil spill in 1989. And as soon as we started winning that battle, Dune said to me, now we have to stop this road that's going to go across the Delta to coal mining. And so that was a whole story in its own that I don't think we have time for in this show, but it was, we did stop the road, and we had to go to all the way to Washington, D.C., to the belly of the beast, as Dune was saying, to get this road bill pulled out of an appropriations bill. So it's been one step after the other, but what I really want to say is Dune at one point said, I want to stop being against everything. I want to promote solutions.
Yes, yes.
And so... hence, this is where we are today, and we're very happy about this because it's one of the few times that, for all the years that it's taken, the wild salmon and the birds and everything in the Copper River Delta are safe.
Yes. That's, yeah.
And celebrating.
And celebrating, right, exactly. Right, right. No, and actually from next week's show, wonderful Deborah Falmouth, just returning from Syria, said, much beauty, again, in the belly of the beast, much beauty and defiant joy. You know, but she said that, inshallah, you know, may it be so, may the divine make it so, has a special deepening now. I'm going to the shop and I'll be back, inshallah. May it be so. But yeah, no, both of you, again, yes, we're all lucky. We don't know how long things take. like I'm going long work, and I think that's important. And also, you know, what you both are good at, you know, which is effectiveness is not, you know, purist, like, oh, I won't deal with bad people. You know, it's like another guest, a friend of show who works for the bonobo, preserving the bonobo in the Congo. She works with Lauren Kabila, you know, foibled and direct, but he's willing to protect the bonobo, you know. So in the same way, you know, you've been dealing with the shadow underworld, the belly of the beast, as you say, with, you know, Korean industrialists and, you know, environmental challenging ally etiquette and many things, but you, yeah, but dedicated to preservation and solutions. And what I wanted to toss back to you, you know, that you were alluding to right before the break, and it was, yeah, that idealism and pragmatism, you know, they meet down the road if our vision is longer than 1 inch. You know, that it's true that, you know, the rainforest's worth more, even in crude economic terms, as rainforest than as two seasons of Burger King. And I guess that's also what you and Carol were saying about, you know, presenting it to going, this is worth more even in economic terms. Is that, was that part of your conversation with the, you know, the dementors you were saving?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's been really difficult because, you know, we've had to, you know, sit down with our environmentalist buddies, with native entities, and you know, and because we're creative and we're also a force to be reckoned with, we've had to, you know, really look at all the different choices and avenues and, you know, and just try and figure out how to get this done. And I know that, you know, the 11,000 acres that's still outstanding, that's owned by the Korean Alaska Development Corporation. You know, we're going to have to figure out a real creative way, and we don't have much time to get this deal done. And so,
meaning what?
We're going to have to go back to the well. Well, Dr. Shin now is in his late 70s, and he's not going to go another round. You know, he's going to transfer the coal field back to his Hyundai Samsung partners and to his family. And we may never be able to, you know, protect it again because they'll sell it to speculators that hope one day that, it will be mined. So, you know, we're going to have to, you know, figure out how to raise the private funding and bring back a lot of the players that have worked with us over the last two decades and try and figure out how to put our egos and dysfunction and baggage aside and go in and get the damn job done.
You know, we've had some wonderful, surprising allies around the way, like Jane Goodall has spoken out for this, and we have Dune and I got a congratulatory email from her. We keep her in touch, you know.
Whoa.
Ancestor Theodore Roosevelt IV, he's willing to step up and help us however he can. Gifford Pinchot, is he the second or the third?
Third.
Right.
And then Wildlife Forever organizations have stood by us, realizing the priceless aspect of the Copper River Delta, which has one of the last largest wild salmon runs on the planet, which is kind of hard to comprehend. But we want to thank everyone who has stood with us all along the way, and we'd like to invite more to step up and help us with these kinds of issues in
Definitely.
Alaska.
Definitely.
Go. Oh, and one thing I'd like to share, too, is that, you know, EAC Preservation Council is still, you know, taking on the Navy, who's planning on doing their trainings and bombings in the Gulf of Alaska starting on May 1st to the 12th, two days before our commercial fishery begins in the Gulf. We're still holding the line, hoping that people will come to their senses about Shepherd Point and move it to a site that the community can support. The Alaska Mental Health Trust has decided that they're going to start doing beach mining at Icy Bay and Cape Yagatega.
What? Wait. They're going to start doing what?
Beach mining, actually taking the ocean beaches and mining them for minerals.
And that's called the Alaska Mental Health Trust?
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
It helps support.
Let me get our satirist back. Wait.
Yeah.
Just repeat that again slowly. The Alaska Mental Health something.
Trust.
Yeah.
And what they're like a land trust that receives land grants in huge masses of resources, whether it's oil, gas, coal, trees, whatever, and they're able to destroy it and make money so they can, you know, put towards their mental health trust program.
Oh, God.
And it's one of the saddest things I've ever had to deal with. And, you know, and I know that, you know, letting them, you know, mine our beaches is not going to happen. And, you know, at somewhere we're going to have to draw the line in the sand, and that's going to be a good spot to do it, because Icy Bay is absolutely out of this world stunning, just like the entire Copper River Delta. And now there's new oil and gas permitted by a anonymous entity in Controller Bay, which is the eastern end of where we fish on the Copper River. And so, you know, there's constant, people coming for us, wanting our resources, wanting to just take it and destroy it. And the watershed of the Copper River, much like in Bristol Bay, where we have the largest red salmon return on the history of the planet, some of these watersheds really need to be just left alone and intact and wild and pristine, so those salmon will have a home to come back to. Like one of the prayers that I make every year and the EAC people do is we pray to Willetney, who is the salmon goddess. She's the spirit of our salmon, who we pray to, wanting, you know, the salmon to safely return and not to get lost on the way or get scooped up by trawlers or, you know, illegal gill nets and then all of the, ocean acidification that's happening, in our oceans. People really, you know, need to, you know, understand that this is, you know, it's an intrinsic wild environment that deserves to stand for the rest of time. And this is one of the places where we still have a chance to get it right. And I, like Carol said, you know, appreciate all of the support and you, Caroline, for being such a supporter and so much so that you came down the Copper River with us to see it yourself and
yeah.
See the beauty and the bounty is really unbelievable.
Right. No, what a powerful time. The day we came off the Copper River was the day that Katrina hit New Orleans, and we did. And that's right, you were on that show, and I hosted you and Carolyn Raffensperger and maybe somebody else on the deltas, the Copper River Delta and the Louisiana Delta, and how everything's connected, and, you know, sending support. Yeah, and the prayers. And what is the name of the salmon goddess again?
Willetney. It's spelled Willghtnee, Willetney.
Willetney. All right, I'll work on it. But that's great. And then I just have to go back to, just for a moment, to the Alaska Mental Health Trust, in which they are hardly any of those words, you know, wanting to mine the beaches in order to fund their mental health project while they're destroying the mental health and soul of humans as they're working. And we're going to pull them over and cite them for irony deficiency, going, good God, you're creating the problem. Anyway, I just had to go back to that thing.
It's one of those strange situations where the money gets funneled, actually, that they make into a lot of things that could conceivably be good. I would say it's an old way of financing things. I think the University of Alaska, Dune, I think it's one of the few income streams that goes back into the state. And, of course, Alaska is one of the most pro-resource development states you could possibly look at. And that's another thing we all have to consider right now about Alaska and our roles is it has a lot of resources there and the state is broke right now. So we all have to be pretty vigilant. They made a lot of bets on oil. They thought the price of oil would stay up and they get a lot of license and royalty money from the oil industry. And it crashed, and Alaska's financially in a hard time. And so we have to encourage our legislators to look for alternative energy. I mean, Alaska could be an amazing place for water to, and sun and wind, and it needs a lot of technology jumps, but if we don't start really standing up to protect Alaska, like even the Arctic Refuge and the Arctic Ocean is really being looked at right now.
No, we want to come back there. We will in some seconds. But it's also many great word mavens, you know, are encouraging us to replace the word regulations with protections.
Yeah.
Right? These are, you know, again, there's an assault on all protections, really. These are regulations are protections. So anyway, everybody out there, again, everywhere you see the word regulation, replace it with protection, much more. And the hero, and what we spiral forth, and you, Dune, really embody this, the hero is the man or woman who protects things. And I'd have to say one more thing. When you said that the Navy is planning their bombing exercises in the Gulf of Alaska on May 1st, we go, oh, God, Dementors, May 1st, the sacred day of the all life, it's 3 months from now, right? Today is Candlemas, and it's one of the four cross quarter holidays. It's February 2nd, May 1st, August 2nd, Halloween, rounded off. But, you know, the day most sacred to life, of course, is when the Navy plans its bombing training. Oh, we're gonna pull them over and cite them for irony deficiency as well. Let's go to our friend Sarah James, shall we, in our mind, and the Arctic, and Putin, and Tillerson was approved, and the thing. And, anyway, we're so glad for your victory, Dune Lankard and Carol Hoover, and the preservation of, 67,000 acres that is safe?
63,000 acres of coal,
right.
And 63,000 acres of surface lands, because it's a surface and a subsurface opportunity.
Oh.
And we also, I think we need to thank the Nature Conservancy, Chugach Alaska Corporation, and New Forests, because they worked really hard to get all this to happen, and we helped make it happen. But they all agreed. It's a really groundbreaking, innovative agreement.
Right.
Yeah, and I really think at the end of the day that, you know, they realized that conservation is a peer and real economic solution that can create revenues that a lot of people, you know, want to see from any kind of lands. But even like, you know, the University of Alaska land grants and the Mental Health Trust land grants that they received for all this development, if they would look at preserving that land, they could create the millions of dollars in revenues that they desperately need. And what happens is you take out all of the additional cost of doing business, which is usually about 99%. And so you have like a 1% net out of most of these development projects, where when you do a conservation easement, it's 100% net. It's a win-win-win all the way across the board. And so, you know, that's why I think that we should be looking, if we're truly worried about the economy and the environment, then conservation is the way to go.
Absolutely. And you both are great storytellers and effective, you know, moving the molecules to make the story true. And then shall we touch on again our ally Sarah James that you introduced me to so long ago, Carol?
Yeah.
And when she was, you know, marching in Washington, I think it was Bush, she was like, and I'm going to kick his butt in a good, kind way, and I'm going to tear them down in a good way. Anyway,
yeah.
She's very sizzly, our wonderful Sarah. Very rah, rah, rah. So, yes, the Arctic, and she's told us not to use the acronym, don't call it ANWR, because then they'll drill it, because acronyms remove intimacy. Call it the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge.
The place where life begins.
Right. And so Obama has saved some of that from drilling, right? But we have Rex Tillerson and the Dementors, you know, and going, I'll do that. So what is your scouting report and your wildest wish, Dune? And then Carol.
Sure, Dune.
Okay, well, Obama did save 115 million acres of the Chukchi and Beaufort Sea offshore of the Arctic, but the NPRA is now, you know, a battle zone the town, the village of Nuiqsiq, is now surrounded by oil development that will impact their subsistence and wild subsistence way of life that has, you know, helped them for tens of thousands of years. And so I think right now there's going to be rollbacks, especially having Exxon's past CEO, Tillerson, in charge. I think that it's going to, you know, open up areas of development in Alaska that's, you know, we're going to all have to, you know, all hands on deck are required at this point because it's not going to be an easy battle over the next 4 years. And so, you know, we're going to meet with our Arctic protectors here and sit down and come up with a strategy to take on the powers that be that want to see this incredible place developed. And I remember the first time when I went up to the Arctic village in 91, and I was excited because the Eyak people had migrated out of the interior of Alaska 3,500 years ago and ended up on the coast where we've lived since. And I remember when I first went up to the Arctic refuge to meet with some of the leaders up there, and there's about 150 sovereign nations from around the world represented in this conference. And the first thing the chief did was he said, you know, Mr. Lankard, welcome home after 3,500 years.
That's great. That's great. Wonderful.
And so I knew that whatever happened on that end of the pipeline would end up in Prince William Sound like the Exxon Valdez oil spill did. So I felt there was an immediate bond, and Carol and I decided that we would work with them ever since.
That's very important. We're in our last less than a minute here, but we, you know, let us be as relentless as coyotes going rah, 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 in protection. Thank you so much, Dune Lankard, for your work, and may the salmon goddess and the spirit of the of the Arctic, which, you know, remember the iceberg chased Chevron out of there, right? I mean, we call on the salmon goddess and the spirit of the land because you are such a good pragmatic mystic, Dune Lankard, and may all that you love you and support you and make you laugh, and thank you so much, and thank you, Carol Hoover, so much. Longtime allies, so effective. They've just worked decades since late 90s to preserve and protect 63,000 acres that will never be mined. A fantastic accomplishment with many allies, and there's more work before us, but thank you so much, Dune. Thank you so much, Carol Hoover. Their website,
Caroline,
is eyakpreservationcouncil.org. Thank you very much, Timmy Olstead and Erica in Berkeley. I'm Caroline Casey, CoyoteNetworkNews.com, and we'll reconvene next week on Syria. Mwah.
Be sure to catch Apex Express on KPFA. Apex Express is a weekly program following news and cultural events throughout Asia and the Pacific Islands. Find out about issues affecting Asian American and Pacific Islander communities locally and globally. Get on board the Apex Express Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. on KPFA.
You are invited to join the Middle East Children's Alliance and joining hands for the U.S. premiere of the interactive documentary, Jerusalem, We Are Here, on Thursday, February 23rd, 7 p.m. at Berkeley City College Auditorium, 2050 Center Street. Jerusalem, We Are Here brings Palestinians back into the neighborhoods from which they were expelled in 1948. The film asks, if houses and streets, neighborhoods and cities could tell us their stories, what would these be? Director Dorit Nauman and two of the participants will be at the screening to answer questions, probe the past, and engage with the painful present. This benefit for Mecca is wheelchair accessible. For info, www.meccaforpeace.org, 510-548-0542.
Kapanatas Kandar.